Hi, welcome to Visual Studio Toolbox. I'm your host, Robert Green, coming to you today from the cozy confines of Studio B here at Channel 9. And my guest is Julie Lerman. Hi, Julie.
Hey, Robert.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you very much.
Julie is the queen of Entity Framework, the diva of data.
Oh, a poet.
I just made that one up, too.
And I've never heard that before. It was really unique.
Cool. Author of best-selling Entity Framework books.
The
books to have, four of them and counting at
yeah.
this point?
Yeah, well, no, watch out with the and counting. Just four.
Okay.
Yeah.
And author of Pluralsight Training on Entity Framework as
yeah.
well as other subjects.
Yep.
And here for the MVP Summit. I've been trying to get you on the show for a while, so I love the MVP Summits because people
gets us out
come
here.
To town and then I can grab somebody and get them.
Yeah,
the
no, this is I'm so happy to be able to do it.
Excellent. So you're going to show us some tips and tricks on Entity Framework today.
Yeah.
We had, of course, the Rowan and Diego were on to show us Entity Framework a while ago. Very popular episodes. And so now we're going to go, and you're going to show us some stuff that people doing Entity Framework should have as tips.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. It's a lot of things I see people asking about on Twitter and in forums and Stack Overflow or, you know, it's kind of repetitive problems. And so I want to show kind of what the problems are and how you can avoid them, but also have an understanding of what's causing them. And then also some tools for helping you avoid some of those problems
excellent.
And debugging.
Sounds excellent.
Great.
Let's see.
All right. And the glasses. So I have here a project where it's just a simple project. I've got some domain classes. I have a little data layer. And I'm just going to execute this stuff using some integration tests so we can take a look. It's either that or console app, right, for doing this kind of stuff. So my domain, as you can tell, I came up with it on my way over on the airplane. And I have airline and some flight legs and passengers and scheduled flights. These are my domain classes. So there's airline and the flights. And one thing I have in common across all of these is a little bit of logging information. I have a modified date field in them all. And so that's going to be kind of the focus of what we're going to look at in a bit. And for my data layer, I have Entity Framework here. And my DB context, which is going to manage all of the persistence between the database and my domain classes. So my DB context is aware of my domain classes by way of these DB sets. Okay, so my test, oh, wait a minute, I have to use the new trick I learned yesterday for moving from window to window in Visual Studio. Control-Tab. Yeah, so I'm going to go down to my automated tests.
Nice.
So
you
what
just discovered that?
I didn't discover it. I saw somebody doing it. It's like, wait, he was doing a presentation on something totally different and very deep, but in the middle of it he was doing that. I was like, wait, how'd you do that? It's like, well, that's always been an entity in Visual Studio.
Yeah, I don't think I knew about it until you just showed it either. So it's probably been in there since
the
beginning of time.
Is that a wrap then? Like I've done my job? So with my little automated test, my integration test here, what I'm doing is I'm creating a new airline and then asking Entity Framework to go ahead and persist that into the database.
Okay.
And remember I pointed out that modified date. And this is a problem I see people run into all the time, specifically with these kind of tracking fields with dates when they're doing some logging. And also, I just want to point out that I have this transaction scope in here, and that's one of a number of tricks for rolling back changes when you're doing integration testing, because I have my little test database, and I don't want to keep persisting this test repeatedly into there. So that's just a little trick that I'm doing in there. So what I'm doing is after I insert my airline and I save the changes, I'm just testing to make sure that the airline has the correct date, which is today.
Okay.
I want it to be today. So I will go ahead and run my test. And it's got a build. And my test fails. Are you surprised? Oh no, my test failed.
You did an ad and the test failed.
Yeah. So what happened here was this problem was a DB update exception where actually the problem came back from the database. This is a SQL client exception that came back to the update. And what it's saying, SQL client is saying, you gave me a date that I just don't understand.
Hmm.
Okay? When I tried to do the insert. Right? Okay. When I tried to do the insert, you gave me a date I don't understand.
What is that?
What the problem is, modified date time is a non-nullable type mm-hmm. with .NET. So because I didn't supply the date, and .NET uses its default minimum date, which is 1111, like
right.
first century, right? January 1st of the first century. And the database, I'm using SQL Server, the minimum date for a date time in SQL Server is January 1st, 1753. Pretty sure I have that weird number in my head. So it totally doesn't comprehend January 1st.
So
one
the
first century.
111 SQL looked at that, tried to put it in the date field, and said, "This is
way too early.
Way too early.
I don't even understand that date.
Got it.
It doesn't make any sense." So people do this all the time. They like you know they have these date fields and they forget to get to, they don't populate them. But the error is kind of a weird one that mm-hmm. you might not understand. So okay. there's that like can't like. When you see that error, that's probably that datetime 2 with SQL Server, that's probably what's causing the problem. So the real solution here is just that I need to specify the modified date. And that would be datetime today.
Okay,
so if I run this again, it will succeed. It better. Yes. Thanks for not making me look like a dope. Okay, so I solved the problem, but what I'm really doing here is saying, okay, every time you do an insert or an update, don't forget in all of your code, all of your application, wherever you might be doing inserts right. and updates, you have to also remember to supply the date.
Don't forget to put this thing in, which should just default to today unless you wanted it to be
exactly.
something else.
So what I want to do is show you how to make it default to today without having that effect like the domain logic that you're writing in your application, which is to override the context save changes method. This is a virtual method. So what I'm going to do is I'll go back to the context. Actually, before I do that, I want to take advantage of, I want to avoid a problem. I know that a problem I'm going to have is when I want to override save changes, with some logic here, I know in advance because of my experience that I'm going to run into a problem with the fact that I might be dealing with an airline, I might be dealing with a leg, I might be dealing with a passenger.
Right.
So instead of worrying about that, what I'm going to do is take advantage of an interface. Okay. So actually, there's a couple of ways I could solve that. I could have a base class. That will always have modified date in it, so I know that I'll just use the base class and modified date, regardless of which one of these derived types it is, or I can use an interface. And because of the fact that I already happen to have the modified date in all of those fields, the easier thing is to use an interface
okay.
because, you know, I would say, oh gosh, if I use an interface, then I have to go back and edit all those things to implement the interface. That happens to already be there, so it's a faster solution for me in this particular scenario. So I'm going to, I don't have to add the item. So what I'll do is I'll go ahead and just add an interface into here. And I'll call it iLogInfo. So just for some logging stuff. And the nice thing here too is if I have some other things I want to implement, I can just stick them mm-hmm. in here and I can then have them implemented in the classes.
Take that bracelet out. It keeps banging up against the desk.
Thank you.
The noise
I had them.
You guys are hearing.
Yeah, I had that. Okay, we'll take that off
All
too.
All right, awesome.
Yeah. Well, you know, I often have a whole slew of bracelets, and when I speak at conferences, I tend to wave my hands a lot, and it's just like jingle, jingle, jangle, and I have to remember to take those off. Until afterwards. Okay, so.
I think I had a head cold that day, and I kept going like this. I kept sniffing, and I then watched the recording, and it was driving me crazy. I wish somebody had told me.
Okay, I have to get rid of the usings. I hate that. Okay, I got to remember all my scopes here. This is public, and that is not public. Okay, so that is correct. So I'll just go over to Airline, and I'll implement that interface here. I won't bother putting it in all the other ones. So modified date's already there, so I don't have to worry about it. So now back to my save changes. And since I've already typed more code than we want to watch me type, I'll go ahead and drag this in here. Thank you to whoever in Visual Studio gave us that capability. And because I just can't help myself, I had to line that all up. Okay, so now that I've got the iLog info, this challenge is going to be a lot easier. What I'm going to do is take advantage of this change tracker in the DB context. The change tracker gives me access to something called entries. So the context, when the context is working with entities, and whether I'm querying or I'm creating new ones, I added this entity to the context. So for every entity, every object instance that the context is keeping track of, it has another little class, an instance that it retains, which is called a DB entity entry. I think I have that right. And that has the state information for that particular instance. So in save, when I'm at save changes, I don't really have access to my airline instance directly. The context doesn't know about it directly, but it does know about all these little DB entity entries, all these state informations. So I can look at these entries, and the entries actually have pointers back to the actual instances. So I can get access to my airline instance this way. So I'm going to iterate through all of the entries that the context is keeping track of, and in this particular scenario, that's just the one that I added. And then I'm going to look for all the iLog infos, because I know that those are the ones that are going to have modified date. Okay? So really, I would have everything.
That was the benefit of creating the interface.
Yeah, and it was that. So my options were put this code in here first and have iLog info go, I don't know what that is, or get the iLog info in advance. So I'm iterating through all of the entries where the entity that it's pointing to is an iLog info, but I'm doing one more filter. I only want to change this modified date if it's new or if it's been updated.
Okay.
As a matter of fact, if I try to change the modified date on one that's been marked as deleted, that will throw an exception because it just doesn't have that ability because it's being marked as deleted.
Right.
And you really don't want to do it anyway, but it will care.
Okay.
So once I've got that, then I can just go ahead and take the entry, its entity, cast that to iLog info, which gives me access to the modified date property, so it's all strongly typed, and then I can set the date.
And if you wanted to just make that the default, you could check to see if there was a modified date, and if there wasn't, then set it to today. I'm assuming that you, in your code, had the ability to make the modified date yesterday. Maybe?
This will overwrite it. This is following my business logic of whenever I'm pushing something into the database, go ahead and kind of give it a date stamp.
Okay.
So no, this will overwrite it.
Got it.
If I wanted it not to, if I wanted to have other logic, I would have to explicitly do that. If modified date, I mean, what logic would you use though? If modified date wasn't today, don't update it. Like, how will I know? Right? So this will absolutely, how will I know that, you know, this wasn't a new modification? So my business logic, my domain logic says I want to give it a stamp of right now.
Okay.
Before I stuff it in the database.
So if this were a case where when I add a new customer, the start date defaults to today.
Mm-hmm.
So if I don't specify the
modified date.
Modified date is a flag. When was the record modified?
That's exactly what
I'm saying that, let's say that I had a property of the object that was started. I'm adding a new account. When was the account open?
Oh.
By default, they opened today.
Yeah, and I would put that in a constructor.
Right. So you wouldn't put that in. You wouldn't put business logic in the override of the save changes, or would you? Is that making things messy?
Yeah, I would. That particular scenario, that makes a lot more sense for me to say, whenever I instantiate a new airline, please, you know, set the airline incorporated date to today.
Okay.
Right? This is different. I mean, you could certainly put other kinds of logic in here, but this is really more just before I go into the database, this goes into the database, I just want to, you know, do some kind of cross-cutting logic in here.
So I guess a better way of instead of coming up with a scenario, I'll just ask it as a question. Would you as a best practice put business logic in here, in the override of the save changes? Or would you just limit it to mechanical things like making sure the modified date is set correct?
Personally, yeah, because this is my data layer.
Okay.
This is not my business domain. This is about this is my data layer.
Okay.
So, yeah. And I like to, you know, try to have separation of concerns. So this piece of information here really isn't about the airline.
Right.
It's about something completely different. Right. So, and then once this is done, I just go on my merry way of asking Entity Framework to just complete its logic for doing that persistence. So let me go ahead and run my test again. So the only way with this test runner, I know something new happened, is that I'm watching the milliseconds.
I think you're still passing in the modified date.
Oh, let's go see if I changed my test. I did. Okay, so the test will pass either way. So here's the beauty of this. Now I'm ignoring the modified date again. Thanks for that. It's called pair programming. Okay, so go ahead and run this. And it ran again. Excellent. It's 877, and it worked.
Cool.
So I don't see a need to debug through that. You get the logic of what I did there.
Yes.
And
cool.
So, you know, this is a nice pattern to be able to override the save changes and put this kind of logic in there.
And I love the trick of using the interface as a way of checking the type.
Oh,
essentially.
Yeah, because otherwise I'd have to, even if I knew that 100% of my classes have modified date, I'd still, I could do one of two things. I'd have to cast each one, say, oh, this is an airline.modified date. But I'm pretty sure that it's possible for me to use a magic string here. So I could conceivably say I'm already casting to an entity, but I believe I can do entry property and then modified date. Yeah, I could do that and then set the value that way. So that's a way to do it without using the interface. Right?
Okay.
But here then, you know, I have to be really sure. If I'm not using the interface, I have to, you know, it would really suck if I hit a class that didn't have modified date in there.
Right.
Or hit a class where I type modified date wrong.
So
I like
clean.
This strong, I like the strong typing.
Yeah, and it makes the code more readable as well.
That's pretty, yeah. All right, so.
Did I get rid of the wrong one?
I don't know. So that was the first thing I wanted to show. The next thing is a tool that I really love. Are you familiar with the Entity Framework Power Tools?
No.
Okay, so let me flip over here. I every chance I get to show people these power tools, I do. So here's my big chance, and to show you too.
Yes.
So one of the problems with using code first is that I have this DB context where I've said, okay, here are the things I want you to be aware of. Here are my DB sets. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I've also set up my classes, and I have, relationships between things. For example, I've got these legs inside of my airline. So I'm kind of winging it as far as knowing or hoping that when the DB context reads all of this information and then infers the model in memory, mm-hmm. that it's inferring it based on, inferring it in the way that I was hoping it would.
Right.
Like, I'm doing this. And then sometimes it might be right on, which is great. Sometimes it might be close enough that everything runs great, and then like a couple months down the road, you get like some big, huge blow-up exception, or you find out that like half of the data in your database is wrong, or something is weird. So what I do is I use this Entity Framework Power Tool. I've got it installed here, and you can get it from Visual Studio Gallery, which also means it's available right through this interface. Mm-hmm. And so I already have it installed. It's the Entity Framework Power Tools Beta 3, and that does work with Visual Studio 2012.
Do you know when that came out?
This version probably been out since about January, I think, because they updated it to make sure it's remained compatible with the update 1 mm-hmm. of Visual Studio 2012, because there was some issues with that compatibility.
Is there a version for 2010 of the Power Tools? Or is it a 2012 thing only?
No, well, there was, because we originally had this for 2010.
Okay.
And it was up through Entity Framework Power Tools Beta 1, I believe, was the version. So I'm sure that's somehow available there. And when we get Entity Framework 6, I believe all of that's going to be pushed into just, it won't be a separate install. It'll be part of Entity Framework 6. I'm pretty sure about that. So I do have that installed, and it gives me a couple of things. First, if I right-click on a project, you'll see there's this Entity Framework item in the context menu now. Mm-hmm. And I have the ability to do reverse engineering, database reverse engineering, into this particular project, uh-huh. which will give me POCO classes and a DB context for all of those classes. Right now, the tool will only... It doesn't let you pick and choose what you want to pull in. It'll just pull in all the tables and views. Mm-hmm. Or all the tables. I don't even think it pulls in any views. But it's just kind of like an all or nothing with the tables.
Right.
So that's fine. But another thing I really love is if you right-click on a class that is a DB context, that inherits from DB context, the context menu item, one of them, there's a few of them, I'm just going to focus on this, is to view the entity data model. And so what this does is gives me a visual representation
that
of the model
cool.
back in the Entity Framework Designer, which we're familiar with. Now, one of the things that's really important to understand about this is that you can't just say, oh, so I can now come in here and use this to keep designing my model. That's not the case at all.
It's
just...
It said read-only.
It's read-only, this little locked thing here. It's just so you can look and see.
Okay.
You can save the file if you want, but you can't do anything with it. So I'm looking at this. I like to use this to kind of, you know, get an overview of what the context, how it's interpreting all the information I gave to it. Entity Framework Code First works as convention over configuration. So it has all these conventions, how it presumes everything it's going to infer, and then if you don't like stuff, you can configure on top of that.
Right.
So the first thing I'm going to focus on is, tell me, I know it's late in the afternoon, but how many entities do I have in my model?
I see 5.
That's right. Good answer. Okay, so let's go back over to my context.
But I see 4 DB sets.
4 DB sets, right. So This is an interesting thing. A lot of people don't realize that Entity Framework defines a model, or Code First defines a model, not just by what DB sets you've asked for. What it did, there's actually 3 things. It's everything where you have a DB set, anything that's reachable by something that's already in the set. That's where you got your 5 instead of the 4. So what you're not seeing as a DB set, but you're seeing in the model, is this passenger contact info. I'm looking for those, thank you. Yeah. Passenger contact info.
Okay.
So it was reachable by passenger, and so it got pulled into the model.
And where is that defined?
That happens to be, I just lazily stuck it inside of there. Okay. So the fact that this isn't in its own file has absolutely nothing to do with this. But because passenger contact info is reachable by passenger because of this property, mm-hmm. the model pulled that in as well, okay. which was really handy.
Yeah.
But if, say, you have 100 domain classes and you're building a context where you only want to use like 3 or 4 of them, you might have all these relationships that pull things in, mm-hmm. Which, you know, might make the model bigger, which, unless you have like, you know, hundreds of things in, that's not going to be like, you know, a nightmare. But I do like to keep them nice and trim. But the other problem is you might have accidentally pulled something in that's a required navigation property. Mm-hmm. And if you don't even expect that that's in your model anywhere, you're not dealing with that, and you're going to get all kinds of problems where it's going to say, hey, I need contact info. And you're like looking over here going, but how do you know about contact info?
Right.
Okay, so that's one of the things I'd like to do with that.
I don't suppose you can right click on that and go to definition for passenger contact info, can you?
To here?
Yeah, if you didn't know where it was defined.
Oh no, this won't bring you back to that. So this is, I mean,
that'd be a nice feature to have.
Yeah, because really I shouldn't be putting that in there.
Features.
Well, Entity Framework Designer Team, there you go. There's a new feature for you. I actually met some of the guys from that team who'd work on the designer tag. Nice job, guys. So there's something else about this model that's disturbing to me, that Entity Framework, just again by convention, decided what this relationship should be between passenger and contact info. And you may not realize that that's not what my intention was.
0 or 1 to many.
Right. And I really wanted, what I want in my domain is a 1-to-1.
Right. Each passenger has one set of Twitter and cell phone.
That's right. One contact info mm-hmm. for passenger and one passenger for contact info. So I want to make sure there's always a contact info for every passenger. So by default, Entity Framework couldn't figure that out, or the model builder couldn't figure that out based on what it's seeing in this and what it's seeing in here. It wasn't able to figure that out. So what I need to do,
that's right.
So what I need to do is either modify my classes or modify the configuration. Mm-hmm. All right. So I want to see what it takes to turn this into a 1-to-1 relationship. So the first thing I would think is, well, passenger knows there's one passenger contact info, but passenger contact info doesn't know about one passenger. So let's see what happens if I do that. And that I'm okay with that in my domain. It'd be nice to navigate from a contact back up to the passenger. So that's fine by me. I'm just making that up because showing you how this works is how to define a 1-to-1 relationship mm-hmm. works is more important to me than following, like, you know, my domain logic at the moment, because these 1-to-1 and 1-to-0-1 relationships with code first, actually convention doesn't handle them. Entity Framework needs your help because it can't. Obviously, it didn't infer that well.
Right.
It inferred it the way its rules said to infer it. So you do need to know how to set this up if you really want to specifically have a 1-to-1. So the first thing I'll do is I'll create a passenger property here. Uh-oh, I made myself have to actually type all that. Okay.
No.
So now let's see. Right back to my, whoops. Oh, this is actually good that I showed you. I do this all the time. This is happening because I just said save all, and this diagram is in there, and the diagram is read only, and it's saying, oh, what do you want me to do? So and it's write protected, read only, write protected. So I have in the past gone, oh, just overwrite it, that's fine. But I've actually realized this has created a couple problems for me where the diagram doesn't, when I look at the diagram again, it doesn't seem to update. So I'm going to cancel, and I'm going to just go ahead and close it.
Okay.
And that gets rid of it. So I'll go ahead and save again. So, okay, now I've saved my class. Now I want to go and see what that looks like again. So I go here to my model, and Waiting, 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 waiting. I'm not even getting a little spinning, like waiting. Yeah. It's actually finished. It finished, but it failed. Right? There's an error message down there. And it says, well, take a look at the output window to see what the problem was. So, oh my God, there's all this stuff in the output window. But never fear. Just go up to the top. And you can see here's the exception has been thrown. This is a nice long explanation, unfortunately. Unable to determine the principal end of an association, so between contact info and passenger. The principal end, so the principal is like the parent, parent-child,
right.
parent.
Okay.
So with a one-to-one relationship, entity framework says, all right, I have one of this and one of that, but I have to infer a foreign key in the mapping, in the metadata. I don't know which one of these things is going to get the foreign key.
Okay.
So I need some help. You need to kind of guide me with that, with configuration. Okay, so I'm not going to go to the rest of that. So that's a common problem also, because one-to-one relationships can't come to you by way of convention. You mm-hmm. do have to add some configuration. So it's actually two steps that I need to force it to a one-to-one. So I'm going to do one step at a time and just for fun, show you what we get with only half of it. So one half of it is that I'm going to say that contact info is required.
Okay.
All right. So in a way, that seems like I'm saying, well, this is required, so the other one maybe has to have the foreign key. But like I said, I know this is only half. I just want to show you this because this is kind of a funny, maybe a little bit of a surprising result. So I'll go back to here. I wish there was a keyboard. Hey, design team, keyboard shortcut for this thing. Okay, so let's see what happened. Now it has the contact info required, but now it says, okay, this one's required and this one's not required. It's not required. So the answer is not to go back and put required on both fields. Actually, the answer is I really need to help Entity Framework understand which one of these owns the foreign key.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm going to do that with, you can do this with Fluent API configuration or an annotation. I'm going to use a data annotation just because it's just a little faster. So I'm going to use the foreign key data annotation, but you don't just use it on its own because it doesn't know, even though I'm looking at this and I go, oh, right, it's the foreign key to passenger. Well, that's not obvious to the class, right? It's just a foreign, you're just saying foreign key. You have to tell it which property, which other property in here is going to give me the rest of the metadata that I need to figure out what this relationship is. So I'm going to say it's, and it's a string, the passenger property. Now it just so happens that it's the property name is the same name as the type, so I just want to point out that it's the property's name that I'm putting in there. Okay, so now that this is all done, I'm using my handy dandy tool again. I really love this tool. Okay, I didn't get an error. Let's see. Ta-da! There it is, one-to-one. Okay. So there was, understanding that CodeFirst does need a little help to specify a one-to-one. Mm-hmm. It can't do it by convention. And also using this tool is really a great, 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 great tool. And I love using that. So.
So that being able to view the model like that helps you validate if the model is really what you think it is.
Pretty much.
So you look at it. You know, before you did this, you would look at that, you'd evaluate the relationships, and then you would discover that you, in fact, did not have a one-to-one relationship.
And you might discover that the hard way, right?
Yes.
Right. You have to look. Like, a lot of times, before I had that tool, I would just go and check the database because I was, let this, whether if I'm using mm-hmm. migrations or just letting it create the database each time, I would just go and look at the database schema each time. So that's also helpful to check the database schema because
right.
there might be nuances. Maybe you've configured things like configured max length or things like that. You want to see how that really comes out in the database. You,
right.
you won't see that in the conceptual model, but the conceptual mm-hmm. model, looking at that, is really a first line of defense. I think it's really important to take a look at that. Okay, so I'm going to flip over to a different solution and a different problem. Okay. Solution. Okay, great. So this solution is one where I have my domain classes. It's the same one. I just copied them in here.
Okay.
And my data access layer. And I have, instead of a unit test, an automated test for a front end, I actually have a little WPF app for the front end. So instead of running through all the code and then showing you how it works, let me just run this and then we'll watch it work and look at the code a little bit too. Mm-hmm. Okay, so I'll go ahead and I've got a great breakpoint here. Okay, so the first thing, the window's loading. I'm just doing a little identifying my data binder there. That's no big deal. And then I call refresh form. So this, what this little app is for creating new flight legs. Okay? Mm-hmm. So I'm instantiating a new flight leg. I'm such a mouse user. It's always like I have to stop and thank for using the keyboard. I'm trying to train myself to do more keyboard stuff. So I've instantiated a new flight leg, and now I'm taking that flight leg and using the WPF data binding to bind it to my binder, which will bind it back into all the controls in my UI. And then what I'm doing is getting a list of airlines. Actually, without debugging, let me show you a little bit of this little UI. Okay, so what this does is it's just gotten my... Actually, it's not a bad idea to have done it this way. Okay, I've got my other breakpoint. I just have to make sure it's all there. Okay, so I've gotten a list of airlines and dropped them down. Okay. And I'm working with a new instance of leg. Now I want to go back to this code where I got that list. Okay, I'm doing something tricky here. Now, when I'm pulling in data, I've done a query here, and by default, the context is going to track everything that's coming back to the data from the database. Okay. So remember those little DB entity entries, right? So it's going to, in addition to materializing all these airlines, now it's got to stop and materialize all these entities and set up all the original values and, you know, do all that extra work.
You're just displaying them in a list box.
It's a reference list. I don't need that. So this is actually a really great performance thing to do, especially, you know, I had 4 items, but you might have a lot more, right? You might have just fatter data or something like that. And it might not be for a list box, it might be for a different reason. But if I know that I do not want Entity Framework to waste its time paying any attention to these objects, then I can use this as no tracking method on the DB set. Okay? So now Entity Framework, my context, doesn't know anything about these airline instances. Okay. So back to this little UI. I'm going to select an airline, Ali Airline, Olympia, right nearby. Ah, so I've got a selection changed, making sure I'm not in the process of loading because I don't want this to trigger when I'm just loading the form. And I'm going to take my new leg and set the airline to the airline that I just selected, Allier. So the airline instance that I just selected. So go ahead and keep running. And then we'll say, let's see, that Friday afternoon commute from Redmond back down to Olympia. It's like, you know, 45 minutes on the way up in the morning and 2.5 hours on the way back. So we're going to fly and it'll take 5 minutes. Yay. Okay, so we'll go from Redmond. You have an airport here called Red, right? And then to Ali, the great Ali International Airport. So I'm going to go ahead and save this. And it saved, and then I got a refreshed screen. Okay, so let's go ahead and do another one. Oh, no, I have 2 Alliers. What happened? I didn't have those before.
Well, if they can actually literally fly in 5 minutes from Redmond to Olympia, they're going to have to set up a second.
That must be it. So my business logic figured all that out. Yeah. So I'll show you what happened. So let's do this again. Now, this is a much more important flight leg for me. So I live all the way in Vermont, and getting back and forth to Microsoft takes me like a whole day each way. So I'd rather have this like super duper fast airline. So I've got this Redmond Express, promises they can get me here in 45 minutes. So I'm going to go from BTV to the great Redmond International Airport. Okay, so let me make sure I have a breakpoint on my... I'll put a breakpoint on the save because we already looked at the other thing. So we'll put a breakpoint there. Okay, so I'll go ahead and click save, and I'm about to save changes, and what I have here is I've just added my leg, my new leg. I've added my new leg to the context, and I'm going to save the changes. It makes perfect sense. My new leg is more than a leg. It's not a leg and an arm. It's a leg and an airline. It's a graph.
Okay.
Because in this code, in the selection, in the selected index change code, the selection change code, I attached an airline instance to the leg. So now the leg is coming along with an airline. It also means that when I just called add, I added the entire graph into the context. So now my airline that I wasn't tracking because I had said I was no tracking, Entity Framework just started tracking this. Okay? Entity Framework is now paying attention to the airline. Additionally, I used a very specific method. I used the add method, which says, take this thing I'm giving you to you, and this is for adding into the database. It's for doing an insert. So when it looks at this leg and the airline, it doesn't know that the airline came from the database, even though the airline already has an ID. It doesn't know it came from the database. It just said, oh, here's a new thing you're giving me, and you said to add, so I'm going to add it. So what it did was it created an insert statement for the leg and an insert statement for the airline. And because it was doing an insert, it did not take into account this ID of 5. It just threw away the ID because it's doing an insert. Why would I use an existing ID on an insert, right? So that's what happened.
And that's because you did the as no tracking. Is that right?
In this particular case, yes, because in this case, I have a long-running context. So yeah, if I hadn't done as no tracking, then the context, I was just going up here to say, you know, there's my long-running context. Right. It's that context is aware of everything that's going on for the lifetime of my application, because it's a client-side application, so that's fine. So in this particular case, if I hadn't used as no tracking, the context would have known about that airline in advance. It knew that it was, you know, already in the database, and it wouldn't have, even though I called add and it was part of the it was part of this graph, it wouldn't have changed its state. It said, I already know about that airline, and you know, I'm not adding it, don't worry about it. Okay. And this kind of problem happens a lot with disconnected applications too, where that scenario with disconnected, where you might have passed the whole graph back and inadvertently inserted again. So let me stop this and show you a easier way to get around this problem. I want to open up my airline class. Actually, no, my flight leg class. Not only do I have airline, but I also have the foreign key airline ID.
Okay.
All right. So that those foreign key properties are really, really valuable with Entity Framework. I'm always answering questions where the answer is, well, you should really use the foreign key instead. The foreign key for doing this kind of operation, the foreign key is great. And also for Entity Framework, it's actually a performance benefit, because by setting the airline instance, when I call save changes, Entity Framework has to take the time to go and figure out what the ID of the airline is.
Okay.
By setting the foreign key directly, it doesn't have to do that work. So I've actually had conversations with people where they've said, oh, but I don't want a foreign key in my domain class, that dirties it up. And that's totally understandable, right?
Mm-hmm.
So what that means is, it really means is, okay, don't put that there. You're just going to have to understand a little more about how Entity Framework works, and you're going to have to write code to follow that path to get the effects that you get, the result that you want. Okay? But I have the ID there. Oh, and some of those same people, they, you know, they're like, no, I don't want to use the foreign key. And then I'm like, just try it and see. You know, like, it's your domain, right? I don't want you to have to make your domain to conform to Entity Framework's rules. So it's not a rule. It's just like, it's easier with this.
Mm-hmm.
And the performance is better with this. So they, you know, they'll try it and say, you know, it's so much easier, it was worth it, and yeah, I guess I don't need to be that much of a purist, right? Like, it, you know, and I understand that. It's like, it's my domain, don't let the data access framework, tell me how I should be writing my domain classes. So, you know, I understand that, I feel that. Anyway, I already have my airline ID there, so I like using it. It really, things are a lot easier with relationships in Entity Framework when you have both the foreign key and navigation property. It's just designed to be easier that way. So if I go back here now, what I'll do is instead of setting airline, I'll set the airline ID property, and I'll just take this whole thing. Thank you for that help. And just set it to the ID. Yeah, this should be right. I'm wondering why this is. Oh, this is just. I'm looking at this going, I'm waiting for this line, little squiggly line to go away, but all that is just warning me. It's just a warning. You know, you might not have anything there, but that's fine. So I'm not going to worry about that. So let's do this again. We'll do one more. And I'll just run through it where I've got these little breakpoints. So this time I'll choose Redmond Express. Remember, it didn't go all the way through there. And we're setting the ID. And I got it, you know, I still want my 45-minute flight from Burlington to Redmond International Airport. We'll go ahead and save that. It should be happy. Comes back. And I don't have the Redmond Express.
Nice. All right.
Now, there's one last thing I want to show you, and this is just a little bit of debugging trickery. Okay, I'm just going to go through this one more time since I do have my breakpoints in there. I'll be able to take advantage of this. Okay, now, of course, I need to be able to get back. So let's see, flying east is a little faster, so it might take 50 minutes to get from. Did I
It
just
was
set
45.
that was from BTV to. Oh, now I'm going back. So it's going to be faster because of the tailwinds. So now I'm going to go from Redmond back to BTV. I'll go ahead and save this. Now, what I want to do is just show you how much detailed information is available for, you know, whether you're want to do some really intensive debugging or you're writing tools. You're writing a tool that uses Entity Framework, and you want to have that tool be able to interact with stuff. So I just want to show you just one example of that. I'm going to drill into the context, and I'll just do that through the quick watch. So this is airline context, and this is a DB context. Well, I'm not going to see that there. There it is. This is a DB context. So I'm going to go into the base DB context. And you can see that exposes the change tracker. That's where I got the entries from, and a configuration and the database. And also, there's some non-public members. So I'm going to drill in here to the internal context, the underlying context. And the underlying context gives me access to all kinds of information. Here I can look and see like what my connection, my database connection string is. I can see, you know, what's going on here, like if lazy loading is enabled, and just, you know, all kinds of information about that. Proxy creation enabled. I didn't realize I had proxy creation enabled on here. What I'm more interested in is drilling into this object context. So the object context is what we always had for context with Entity Framework. When we got the DB Context API, DB Context is really just a wrapper. And a smaller and more intelligent surface area for working against the context, because the object context was really detailed, and it was overwhelming. So it's the DB context is a little more limited to things that are more useful for people. Plus, they took a lot of things that we had to do, write a lot of code against the context, the object context, and they just made simpler methods, like there's a find method and all kinds of things like that. But the object context, still, you can get access to it. There's a way to in your code to go from DB context over to down into the object context if you want to really get into some detailed controlled information. And we can even look into the object state manager of the object context. And this actually gives the object state entries, which are kind of the parent of the DB entity entries, with more detailed, but those are the state entries. So they're a bigger, fatter state entry when you access them through the object state manager. So if I go in here, you can see, for example, in my added entity store, I have one thing. That's the new flight leg that I just added. So I can see if I drill in here a little bit, what's that item? Oh, look, it's a leg, right? Here it is. Here comes the entity. There's the leg and all this detailed information. So it's kind of cool. I am a plumber. I can't help it. I like seeing how things work. I was dangling foreign keys always makes me giggle. I'm not going to worry about that. So there's all kinds of this information. Now, not all of it is available programmatically. You can see there's all these kind of locked little okay. fields. So mm-hmm. it's not all available programmatically. However, with Entity Framework 6 being open source, we'll have, if somebody actually wants to deal with that stuff, they'll have access to those things. Now, they can just go in and get the source code and mm-hmm. say, I don't want that private. I want that public. I want access to it.
Cool.
So there's just all kinds of cool information in here for total nerds and plumbers. But that's kind of the whole point. We had access to all this information before, and it was overwhelming. And most people aren't going to need that. Most people, the DB context is like everything, all that they'll ever need, which
but
is why it's the
good
default.
To be able to get to that, because every time we introduce a wrapper over something, people say, "Oh, it's a black box. I don't know what's going on. I don't like that."
I don't like black boxes.
Now you get your cake and you get to eat it too. You get the easy way to do it, and you now have the ability to drill in if you want to see what's going on.
Yeah, so that's just like one trick for mm-hmm. Debugging, just to know that all that information is in there.
Right.
There's even you can even look in here. If you back out to, in the internal context, inside of the object context, there's this other thing called the metadata workspace. This is how Entity Framer actually reasons about all of the metadata, the conceptual model, the mapping layer, and the database schema, mm-hmm. how it figures everything out when it has to take a query that you wrote and link to entities and transform it into a SQL query. So it knows, I've called this entity this, it maps to this table name that, and whatever, all those mappings. So it reads all this information, and we have access to all this information too. There's a whole metadata workspace API that lets us drill into here. And as a matter of fact, interesting thing about that is that it's faster to use the metadata workspace than to use Reflection if you want to get into that metadata. Mm-hmm. So, okay, now I'm just like going overboard. I can't help it. This is why, my book is this big, right? It's fascinating to me. I like knowing how things work. But I'm sure that's more than enough for today. So I will stop that and let you all go back to whatever it was you're doing.
That's awesome. That's great
stuff.
That
was fun. Yeah. So you ready to dig in and go override save changes and all that stuff.
Yeah,
so these are a lot of the things that I see people asking about on Twitter and Stack Overflow and in my inbox and when they corner me at conferences, things like that, tips and tricks. I think it's good stuff.
Cool. So do you have, are a lot of these in your book? In your books?
Are
you gathering enough to do another book?
Oh, I don't know if I'm ready to write another book. It's a lot of work. I'm spending a lot of time putting a lot of my effort right now into the Pluralsight videos.
Mm-hmm.
I really like doing those. I really, really like. I love writing, and I love having the books out there and how useful they are for people.
Yep.
But it's a big undertaking.
Aren't the only thing better than doing the videos like you're doing them? Is having a show where other people come on and do the demos for you.
And all you have to do is come and go, oh, cool, yeah, so how does that work?
Right.
Yeah, nice, all right, I like that. I like that a lot. Yeah, so I just finished up a new course for Pluralsight, which is Getting Started with Entity Framework 5.
Okay.
And it's going to be it's a 5-hour course with just, more, definitely targeted for people who are really getting started, but there's a lot of stuff in there for people who are making the transition as well. So, because there's some changes from Entity Framework 4 to 5, and so now kind of dreaming about what my next course will be.
Cool.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks so much for coming on.
Yeah. Thanks for having me. I'm glad I was finally out here and able to do it.
Too. Hope you enjoyed that. Another 1 hour on Entity Framework.
Another hour, it just happens.
We're guaranteed when we do Entity Framework to talk for an hour, but it's good.
Great. All right.
See you next time on Visual Studio Toolbox.